Miami Memoirs presents real case histories and true stories related to the law practice and experiences of Florida attorney Lewis M. Ress. Miami Memoirs uncorks a caseload of true, weird, wonderful, and wild stories from an always eventful 6 decades of life in the law. From multimillion-dollar land deals to the ghostly aftermath of an Everglades plane disaster via a prematurely deep-frozen cat, these tales feature a parade of unforgettable characters, all sharply observed by a storyteller with a very human empathy for ordinary and extraordinary individuals caught up in the law.
Lewis has just released a new book, Miami Memoirs, including The Maharani's Ring. Fans of strange cases and wild tales will need no introduction to the author's brilliant and fast-paced storytelling, laced with salty evocations of the human carnival of the era and shot through with compassionate insight. From advising the heir to Colonel Sanders and falling out with Buddy Hackett to nighttime jogging with Vitas Gerulaitis, the stories keep on coming. Larry the charismatic wheeler dealer needs to be rescued from yet another risky deal, and a bridge-playing mobster needs help to find his missing daughter. All this and more, along with sage advice against buying a lottery ticket you might win. Welcome to round two. And now, let's begin.
Hi everyone, welcome to Miami Memoirs, Strange Cases and Wild Tales with Lewis Ress. I'm Jeanette Garcia, your host, and today we're doing episode 52, Larry number two, or the second? How should
Larry
I say that?
Larry the second. Larry the second.
Larry the second. So here's Larry again, and I can't wait to hear what this one's about.
Okay, well, here we go with Larry again.
Yeah.
I receive a telephone call one morning at my, I used to go in very early. And I had a private line in those days, and when that rang, I knew I had to answer it personally. And the voice was very clear, and it was crackling with a sense of urgency, like electricity. Huh. He said, Luis, I need you right now. It was Larry.
I recognize
that
voice.
Larry. He says, head up to Fort Lauderdale Executive Airport. The plane will be waiting for you. I'm in Birmingham, and I need you to get this deal that I just made down in writing. I need you now.
Yeah, that has to be Larry. I recognize that impression.
That's how he spoke to me. He called me Luis.
Uh-huh.
Every once in a while, he'd call me Pretty Boy.
Pretty Boy. Huh?
Yeah, he was a funny guy. And it was 7:30 a.m., and I had already been starting work.
Mm-hmm.
Who else? Larry. So I was going to have an office day that day. I was preparing for the next week's trial. And I know Larry's file could be taken with me. Oh, the file I was working on for the next week could be taken with me and reviewed while I was in Larry's plane going up to Birmingham. There was a phone on the plane. They had, shipped ashore, and I would probably be back by nightfall. At any rate, Larry was always appreciative, and he always had interesting and challenging business transactions.
Mm-hmm.
I had labeled him Wild Larry, and I called him that to my wife, but I never called that to Larry's face.
Right.
He wouldn't have appreciated it.
Yeah, it was never a dull moment with Larry, huh? What did you say to him?
I said, Larry, we're going to need secretarial help if it's a contract. I'm going to need typewriters and paper. Maybe you should use a local attorney. You won't need me.
Hmm. And so what did he say?
He boomed back. He says, Luis, get your pretty ass up here now. That's what he said. That's the actual words.
Right. And what was all that about?
Well, it was another mining contract.
Oh, okay.
It appears that there were very, very few Florida lawyers who knew anything about mining.
Hmm.
Larry said that he trusted me, and because he did dredging and digging and mining, I became self-taught. I started out by finding mining contract forms in the law legal encyclopedias, and I graduated there into specialized mining texts and books on mining, and I progressed to books on mining seams. They had cold seams.
And what are books on mining seams?
Mining seams. Well, the entire country's coal seams are charted, actually charted.
Wow.
They're mapped. And the type of coal and grade were usually described in the maps.
Hmm.
And there were books on it. And I had created my own contract forms. Instead of accepting the standard forms, I made my own list of all the clauses which I thought should be covered in a mining contract. Then I compared my list to the form book, and my list had all their forms, and I had five additional clauses that they even hadn't considered.
Oh, wow. Very impressive.
I'm going to talk about being creative.
Yeah. And so what did you do next?
I grabbed my mining form file and a handful of tapes. In those days, we had recording tapes.
Uh-huh.
You taped something. And I had two portable dictating machines, which I took. They were small, and they were the latest advancement in office technology. And I left word for my secretary and my associate that I was going to be gone and where I was, and I drove to the airport. And it was the same Learjet waiting for me.
Mm-hmm.
And as we reached 30,000 feet, the co-pilot offered me the use of the airphone. I called my house to tell him I was, you know, going up to Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
And my son, Brad, who was 8 years old, answered. And I was excited. I said, "Hey, Brad, I'm calling you from 6 miles up in the sky." And his response was, "Dad, don't drink."
And so what happened when you got there?
Well, there was Larry waiting for me in a downtown hotel conference room. He was wearing a shirt, no tie, sleeves rolled up, and he was seated at a large table with five other men.
Oh, okay.
They were all smoking and appeared to be drinking bourbon.
Oh.
And Larry introduced me. Each one of the men was the president of a corporation which either owned land or had mining rights to the land, or was involved in some way in Larry's deal. They seemed cordial and friendly. There were no other attorneys. They would be representing themselves. They had significant contract and mining experience. They believed this would be a very simple contract. Okay, and I knew better. I said, okay.
Yeah.
But, it's going to be a very simple contract, they said. So
no.
I said, okay, but I knew what was coming.
Right,
I mean,
yeah.
They had all kinds of subcontracts and all kinds of clauses and going on.
Super complicated.
You can't just go in and dig coal with a simple contract.
No.
You got to sort it and transport it and sell it.
The whole process.
And weigh it, whatever. So Larry escorted me into an adjacent room, and he outlined the transaction for me. In brief summary, his company would obtain the exclusive right to mine a large tract of land just outside of Birmingham. And he had the legal description in writing there.
Mm-hmm.
And the gentleman in the other room had the mining rights. They owned it. And they had the subterranean studies had been done to show the extent of the coal and the quality. And I could compare that with my book of seams to make sure that it was the right property and the seams were correct, coincided.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The coal would be graded by size and by processing it through a sorter. You know what a sorter is? You've seen those big, tall things, and the coal comes down the chute and goes through, and the smaller pellets drop through the cracks,
right?
And the cracks get bigger as the coal drops, and at the end, big chunks of coal come through.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's a compartmentalizing bin. Then the land for the sorter had to be established, and how you got the coal to the sorter.
Mm-hmm.
And then the storage of the coal after it was sorted, and then the assembly and parking and servicing of the trucks who were going to transport it. And the trucks would be supplied by a separate entity, and that president was in the other room. The roads to the railhead had to be, you had to have permission to use them. They were owned and maintained by a different company, and they had to guarantee the safety and conditions of the roads. The railhead, where the train came in, where the coal cars came in, belonged to the railroad, and their representative was also sitting in the other room. And they would provide open coal cars, and the utility company would purchase the coal, all of the coal produced, based on a price per ton for each grade as set forth in a separate exhibit shortly after it was delivered. So as the coal was delivered, they would pay for it.
Right.
The contract was for the total production of the mine, and there were permits and compliance requirements with all of the licenses, labor laws, safety rules, and multi-level regulations. Oh, yeah, really simple. Piece of cake.
That sounds like maybe five or more separate contracts all coordinated with one another and, you know, and it's relying on each other. Yeah,
you're right. It's a whole intertwining. And if one doesn't do it, then the other says, well, I can't produce because you didn't time it.
Because you didn't do it, yeah.
The coal cars are sitting there. If the coal doesn't come into the cars at the right moment, the cars sit there vacant.
Yeah, the process is disrupted.
Or if the coal cars don't arrive, you can't load them. So it's all kinds of schedules and timing and one obligation conditioned on the other.
Right.
So I said, let's get started. Larry, where are the secretaries and the typewriters?
You told him you needed that.
He says, Luis, they're right in this alcove. And he walked me into a separate adjoining room, and my eyes popped right out of my head. What? There they were, three hookers with long, polished fingernails and low-cut blouses with their breasts popping out. They had heavy lipstick and rouge and mascara all over the place, and there was a sweet smell of cheap perfume. They had just finished servicing the five guys sitting inside, and they couldn't even hunt and peck very well. They couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
The typewriters were old stand-up Coronas, and there was a stack of carbon papers, and the girls were giggling. I was in a state of shock.
You're like, what did I just walk into?
Oh, my God, the blood drained out of my face. I didn't know what to do. I said, Larry, we need to go to a local attorney's office to get this done. He says, no way, Luis. That will take too long, and I will lose this deal. It's very important for me to get this done here and now, right now.
And what did you do with all that?
Well. Think, Luis. Think. What can I do? There must be some way. Don't give up. Find a way.
You always do.
Aha.
Yeah.
Find a way. Well, I took out my dictating machine. And, you know, not everything comes to you all at once. If you find one solution, that's enough.
Yeah.
I took out my dictating machine and I inserted a tape. My yellow pad was out. And I know I could do it. It wouldn't be easy, but I knew I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, make an outline of the deal, using all of my set clauses as a guide and adding the specifics of the deal to the clauses.
Uh-huh.
And I dictated the entire contract on the tape.
Wow.
Paragraph by paragraph, clause by clause, referring to each exhibit carefully, slowly, and distinctly. It took almost the entire tape. It took over an hour. I played it back and made some corrections and ran back over it again. It would do. I brought the tape player into the main conference room.
Wow.
And I announced, gentlemen, Larry, tell everybody that we're going to do a recorded contract. We'll all listen to it. I'll play it twice. Then each party can sign the tape. I will recite that you have agreed to all of the terms set forth in the recording and ask you each to acknowledge again that you agree to the terms and are signing it electronically by stating your name, the name of your company, and the words, I accept and sign on behalf of, and then you state the name of your company.
Mm-hmm.
You will be signing by voice print.
Oh, voice print. Wow, you were ahead of your time. That's wild. Was that ever done before?
I don't think it's ever done before or after. I think it was the first time anyone ever tried that stunt.
Huh.
It was creation of a new law.
Yeah.
I never heard of anyone doing this.
Voice print.
Right up till now. It was crazy, but it was working. They didn't oppose it. They were agreeing. And I was probably flirting with a malpractice suit and a bar complaint, but it might work. I said, can you have a taped contract in Alabama for mining land, which with huge sums of money involved, and sign it by voice print? Contracts for land usually have to be in writing and witnessed.
Yes.
And Alabama law would apply, not Florida law. I don't know. I'm not admitted to practice in Alabama.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was doing writing a contract in Alabama. Maybe a clause that the Florida contract law will apply would cure that issue. I could bring it into Florida law.
Right.
Say, this is being done under Florida law, and I'm a Florida lawyer, I can draw it.
Uh-huh.
But I was looking at a bar problem. So I said, Larry, we did it. And each one stated the major words that I required, and they were magic words. And I told them that they had an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And then I told Larry, I said, you order them lunch. You discuss how you're going to implement the contract, draw up the schedules and the timetables, and initial them, and have the girl make copies of them, and have the girls go back to work. But keep the men here. Keep them here.
And what did you do?
I wanted to get a written contract signed, and fast.
Uh-huh.
And I rushed to the airport, and I headed back to Fort Lauderdale with the tape. And I said, the contract will be back in 4 hours for re-signing.
Huh.
And I contacted our best and fastest secretary, Joanne, and she was called to come by taxi to the Fort Lauderdale Airport to meet the plane. She was there when I arrived, and she listened to the tape in my car on the way back to the office, and she knocked off the contract in record time. My secretary prepared and attached what exhibits we already had. That was the first set. And the package was delivered back to the plane and was in Birmingham within hours. Not four, but close to six. They were all there waiting, and it was signed by all, sealed, and delivered in proper form.
Wow, you did it. Well, I'm not surprised. You always do.
I just tell you the good ones.
Yeah.
And but I was sweating.
What did you charge for that?
I billed Larry $12,000 for 12 hours of work. In those days, that was a huge, big fee. And Larry sent us a check for $10,000 with a letter of appreciation. And he mined the coal, and everybody performed under the contract just as agreed. And Larry made over $2 million on that deal.
Wow.
In those days, that's like $20 million today. And he said that the fee was very reasonable, considering that if he had used a local firm, it would have taken a month, and the fee would have ultimately been triple.
Yeah, definitely. That's some Larry story. I mean, it's always a wow factor when you bring him in. And I'm sure there's a lesson or two for sure. So let's go. What do you got for us, Lewis?
Well, what about creativity in the law practice and in business deals?
Yeah.
That could be a good motivational textbook. It would be a bestseller. I could sell not 30 million, but maybe 5 million. And say, creativity, the answer to success.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a good book. You got to find a way to do the deal. And you got to say to yourself, is it legal? And if it's not legal, can we make it legal? That's the test. Can we make it legal?
Mm-hmm.
Well, remember Aesop's Fables? We started this whole thing with Aesop's Fables. Mm-hmm. He was the Greek who came up with the fox and the grapes. Remember that story?
Yes.
The fox wants the grapes, and he jumps for the grapes, and he can't reach them. And he goes away saying, those grapes are probably sour anyhow. Well, that's not the way Aesop's Fables should go.
Hmm.
The fox gets smart, and he scratches up the land, and he forms a mound, and he jumps from the top of the mound, and he can reach the grapes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how you do it. That's how you do it.
I made that up when I was writing this story because I said, wow, that's creativity. The fox, a little smarter. Animals have brains.
Yeah.
A fox could do that. A chimp could do that, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
Birds do stuff like that. They use tools and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, what about belling the cat? Remember that one?
Nope.
Oh, belling the cat. The mice are getting together. They say, the cat's killing everybody in our community. We got to stop the cat. We got to hang a bell on his neck. And the head mouse says, you know, that's a great idea, but who's going to put the bell on the cat? So, belling the cat, you form a trap, and you put a noose in a platform, and you put a piece of catnip or bait, and the cat puts its head through the noose, and the mouse on top cuts the cord, and the bell falls around the cat's neck.
Oh, wow.
So there's a way of rigging a noose and putting it around the cat, and you had to be creative.
Yeah.
So it's just like a trap, you know, trapping mm-hmm. animals. So that's what you do. We lack creativity. You got to say to yourself, how can I get it done? And then say, what if I tried this and what if I tried that? And find a way. I had a partner by the name of Shelley who was Phi Beta Kappa and went to Harvard Law School and took the Florida Bar. And I get a call from the Chief Justice of the Florida Supreme Court for him. I picked up the call in the office. I said, sir, he's not here. Can I take a message? He says, I want to speak to him. He came out number one on the Florida Bar. We want him to address the group that's being sworn in Tallahassee.
Wow.
I said, sir, I'll have him call you immediately. So he was brilliant, but he always found reasons to say no.
Hmm.
He could always find a way to say no. I said, Shelley, don't give me 10 reasons for no. I want one reason, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to go on and become a judge, but we had second thoughts about letting him go, because he would have had to have one of his arms amputated. Because he was always saying, on the other hand. And you can't do that. And Shelley had a way of talking to clients. So we had a very important client who wound up owning a business in the industrial park, in Sunshine State Industrial Park. Mm-hmm. And he was very active in real estate and so on. And a wonderful man by the name of Ed Dennison. That's his real name, and he's passed on. Great guy. And Ed Dennison came to me. I assigned Shelley to do some work for Ed. Mm-hmm. It was corporate work. And he says, Lewis, I can't understand your partner, Shelley. I said, what is it? He says, he's always saying it is not the case that the matter you are proposing is valid, but to the contrary, the negation of the same is valid with certain exceptions. He says, I don't understand what he's saying. I can't communicate with him. He says he's talking in quadruple negatives. Well, it's a very technical way doctors do this. Rule out, rule out, rule out, rule out, and what's left is what you got.
Mm.
So it's like analysis, quantum analysis in chemistry. You keep ruling out until there's something left.
Mm.
You can't talk to people that way. So the art of communication mm-hmm. is very, very significant. And when you're talking to people, you got to remember, I gave you a lecture the other day or the other episode on putting yourself in the other person's position
mm-hmm.
and trying to be positive and helpful. And so you encourage them, say, you know, I know you comprehend what I'm saying to you, and I just want to make sure that you understand it to your satisfaction. I'm not belaboring this, but I just want to make sure. And then you tell them again simply and do it in the simplistic, like a five-year-old. And then when they get it, say, wow, it's pretty complicated. You really are smart to pick that up. So that's how to do it.
So smart.
Okay. So, you know, you don't want to be bound by the form book. You want to make your own clauses, so don't be bound by the rules of society. Create them. Find a way.
That's a really good way of looking at it.
Yeah, make it legal. Find a way to make it legal. And put a clause in there saying that this might be illegal if you look at it this way, but we've considered this already.
This other, yeah.
We feel that this applies and this is the way to do it.
Hmm.
So politicians do that all the
time.
Oh,
yeah. That's how they get away with murder.
They ignore the law and they go around it. Okay? Then mm-hmm. if you're doing research, a good thing to do in the law practice is read the dissenting opinions in cases that you're using and see what you're faced with if it goes wrong.
Hmm.
So you can understand where the court would be coming from if they overruled the case.
Hmm. That's good advice.
Something else. Okay? So I think I've given you some thoughts about creativity in the law practice. The biggest problem with lawyers is that they tend to be very square and rigid and narrow in their thinking.
They got to be creative. It's all about the creativity. Thank you so much, Lewis. You've definitely demonstrated a lifetime of creativity and success. So got to listen to that advice, everyone.
Thank you.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening. We are excited to announce that Lewis now has his own blog. Visit lewisres.com to get insightful commentary to the Miami Memoirs podcasts, along with an analysis of current events, as only Lewis can provide.